Elizabeth Elliot says that God knows the end from the beginning. He loves us, He is wise, He's powerful, and He calls us to put our faith in Him, to set our feet on that rock which will never move. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including Secure in the Everlasting Arms and God's Guidance, A Slow and Certain Light. As you put your faith in the solid rock, study the unchanging word with us today. Here's Elizabeth Elliot.
Intercession. Intercession is prayer for other people, and it helps me to have lists. I can't remember all the people I'm supposed to pray for. I have a list in my head of people that I pray for every day, but I also have to have written lists, one for Monday, one for Tuesday, etc. And offering is an act of giving. The word used by the old writers is usually oblation. It just means any offering made to God. And although back when I was 12 years old, using the prayer of Betty Scott Stamm, I made that once and for all commitment, Lord, I give up all my own plans and purposes, all my own desires and hopes, and accept thy will for my life. I give myself, my life, my all utterly to thee, to be thine forever. That is an act of oblation, an offering, and it doesn't hurt to repeat that daily. Although God heard you the first time, it's a good thing to remind ourselves that this is the way I want to live today. I am utterly at his disposal. And then acceptance and praise. When Betty Scott said, I give up, she was relinquishing. When she said, I accept thy will for my life, that was acceptance. And when she said, I give myself, my life, my all, that was oblation. And the great question is, what is of paramount importance in your life? Is it important that you put yourself in the presence of God once a day, consciously and quietly? Now, all of the above, I think we can legitimately label prayer, whether it's putting myself in the presence of God and not saying anything. Silence and solitude are forms of prayer. Reading the Bible is a form of prayer. Making the oblation is a form of prayer. So all of this is embraced, I think, in that word. Because when Paul says pray without ceasing, he certainly is not envisioning us on our knees every minute for 24 hours a day. How do we go about praying without ceasing? Especially during our work. Well, we're going to come to that under the next heading. Now, the practice of the presence of God all day, this is what stumps so many people. If you're sitting at your computer and your job involves computer all day long, how in the world can you possibly be praying without ceasing? Or if you're just baking a cake in the kitchen and you're trying to follow a recipe, you cannot be thinking about the recipe and beating the eggs at the same time and praying at the same time, and God knows you can't. But have you ever thought about the fact that every act is meant to be an offering to God? Even if I'm brushing my teeth. Now, I happen to be human, and so God has given me a human body, and there are certain things which are necessary. I have to eat and sleep and exercise and do all of these things. And Paul said, whether you eat or drink, things in which there is no virtue, those are just very humble human necessities. But he says, do all to the glory of God. Eat and drink, brush your teeth, go to work, drive the car, clean the bathroom, to the glory of God. If the smallest things, the least meritorious things, can be offered for the glory of God, then we can learn to practice the presence of God. Some of you are familiar with a little booklet called the Practicing the Presence of God by a young monk who went into the monastery. His name was Brother Lawrence, and he went to the monastery in order to learn to be holy. He wanted to learn to be spiritual and to be holy and to be like Jesus Christ. And he thought that the monastery was the ideal context in which he could learn that. To his utter dismay, he was assigned to the scrubbing of the pots in the kitchen, which certainly didn't sound like very spiritual work. But he wrote this, he didn't actually write a book, the book was written by those who talked to him and asked him questions about practicing the presence of God. And these were just his replies, very simple replies as to how he did this all day. When Amy Carmichael was doing evangelistic work for 6 years before she began the work for the children, she was well supported by people back in Ireland and England because she was doing what they considered was spiritual work. But when she gave up the evangelistic itineration and began taking care of little babies and washing diapers and fixing formulas, there were those who didn't think there was anything very spiritual about that, so she was no longer supported by them. And one man sent a gift, but he said, "I want this to go for the spiritual work of the Donor Fellowship." And she sent the gift back again because she said, "Right now, it happens that our need is for buildings, for bungalows." And she said, "In our experience, souls are more or less firmly attached to bodies, and we can't leave them lying around in the open." Well, the man received the gift back again, and that was the last she heard of him because there wasn't any spiritual work to which that money could be directed. The Apostle Paul said, "I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound." And in 1 Thessalonians 4:1, there's a verse that my father, oddly enough, used to speak to a boys' school at commencement. I cannot imagine that very many commencement speakers would use a verse like this, but this is what it says in 1 Thessalonians 4:1. "Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. Mind your own business and work with your hands." Now, can you imagine telling a bunch of 18-year-old boys to make it their ambition to lead a quiet life? Well, that's what the Bible says. I didn't write it. Paul was inspired when he did. A quiet life is a simpler life. Ask God to free you from the deception of materialism. And that's something that we have to watch like a hawk. Deception of materialism, and we live in the most thoroughly materialistic society that's ever existed, I guess. A life lived in God, in the presence and power of Christ. A quiet life. Is it boring? Not for me, it isn't. Never. God fills the emptiness. He knows how to do that. And one of the ways in which you can simplify your life and live in the presence of God and the power of Christ without quite so many distractions is the elimination of clutter. Am I going to ring any bells out there? Why do people accumulate stuff, junk, useless things, stuff in the back of the closet that you have no idea is there, and if it disappeared, you'd never miss it? When's the last time you took your purse and dumped the whole thing out on the top of the bed to see what in the world was in all those little crannies? Is it your security to surround yourself with collections of things, to have a whole closet full of stuff about one quarter of which you ever wear when somebody else needs it and obviously you don't? Is it the fear of deprivation? We've had a number of students living in our house. We always have somebody living in our house. It's usually been a seminary student or a college student. And it's been very interesting to see their different attitudes towards clutter. And they're all men. I don't think men are, generally speaking, as bad as women are when it comes to saving clutter, but there are some exceptions, of course. And with one of them, he admitted it was the fear of deprivation. If he didn't keep all this stuff, one of these days he was going to need something that he didn't have. And so he keeps plastic bags by the thousands. You never know when you're going to run out of plastic bags. Is it greed? Is it possessiveness? Is this where your security lies? Make do with less, and you'll have more to share. If you don't need it, try what Hudson Taylor did. Every year, Hudson Taylor of the China Inland Mission went through everything he owned, and whatever he discovered in the pile that he had not used in a year had to go. It was either discarded if it was no good, or it was given to somebody who needed it worse than he did, because he decided, if I've gotten through the year without this, I don't need it. We can always say, but I might need it next year. Next year the Lord might come, and you're going to be answerable for all the stuff you kept. That was Taylor's attitude. Learn to practice the presence of God in your kitchen, in the schoolroom, in your workplace, in your car, in your neighborhood, at the computer.
As Elizabeth has said, anything if offered to God can and will become your gateway to joy. Elizabeth Elliott has been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years, drawing insight from her Bible study and her experiences as a wife, mother, and missionary. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.